What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to an emergency edition of the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron doing something with his arm. Jack Manuel, Dalton Pence. Guys, how we doing?
This is why you say subscribe on YouTube to Off the Glass.
I record an hour-long podcast about where Russell Westbrook could go. And naturally, as the podcast finishes, it is now a piece of garbage because Westbrook has been moved.
I don't know.
Dolan's the Rocket fan in the house.
Yeah, so. He's a Rockets fan. He got nothing to say.
I don't know. It really just – I was eating dinner, and I'm sitting there about to take a bite, and I see Westbrook's name. I'm like, oh, he's going to my Houston. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Did you finish eating or puke up your food?
No, I stopped eating. I stopped.
It's funny, though, Dolph, because we just had you on Full Access Hoops, and we talked about this Russell Westbrook, you know,
yes, we did.
What-if scenario, and here yes, we are. Did.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into a quick reminder, like Jack mentioned, make sure you subscribe and review. Find us on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and obviously YouTube. Details of the deal. OKC has agreed to trade Russell Westbrook to Houston for Chris Paul, first-round picks in 2024, 2026, and pick swaps in 2021 and 2025. Initial thoughts on the deal?
I'm not as speechless as Dalton because I'm not as invested in the Houston Rockets, but I remember telling to you guys, as Corey likes to say after learning the saying from me, off wax, that this doesn't – I don't understand why the Houston Rockets would do this. You know, the immediate sort of thought that comes to mind, not having, you know, a heap of time to process it, is that, you know, there must have been some real tension and friction in the locker room because – I don't understand the deal, why you would give up so many assets for two guys who are on two of the worst contracts in the league, yet Daryl Morey still goes in and throws in a couple of picks and some pick swaps for a guy who, I mean, Russell Westbrook is a better player than Chris Paul right now, but Chris Paul is better in a lot of other ways, especially defensively. And I think schematically within the Houston Rockets and what they're trying to do with their lofty championship aspirations, I think this makes them worse as a team. I don't get it. Like, is Daryl Morey trying to lose his job in Houston and go to Washington or something?
I mean, this is a stunning – not. I don't want to say it's stunning because we saw the rumors and, like, it kind of makes sense if you want to keep James Harden happy, get his buddy. They obviously have a history together. You get rid of Chris Paul. I mean, Chris Paul's got to be just the saltiest mother trucker out of this situation. He is now in OKC. Him and Westbrook have been chilling all offseason, and now it's just like, hey, buddy, guess what? You're now in OKC. And now we have to see what Westbrook and Harden look like, right? I mean, these are two ball-dominant guards. When they used to play together and coexist, Harden was coming off the bench. Now this is clearly Harden's the better player of these two, probably needs the ball in his hands more than Westbrook does for this to be an effective team. And now it's a game of what happens now. And another duo to add to the list of duos we now have in the league.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chris Paul.
Yeah. Yeah, Jack, like you said, I mean, there must have been a lot of traction between the really disputed claims of how severed the relationship of James Harden and Chris Paul actually is, because I know how there was, well, I mean, you all don't follow really a lot of the Rockets insiders, at least I don't think so, but I mean, they're sitting there saying there's no tension. The national media is saying there is tension. So it's really back and forth on who to believe, but this is kind of writing on the wall of there really must have been something there that either James Harden, Daryl Morey, or both of them realized that it wasn't necessarily going to be fixed. Like Corey said, it's really just going to depend on how well these two mesh from like a first initial thought. It doesn't look like it's going to be as successful as Harden and Paul was. But if you remember back in the summer of 2017, not a lot of people thought Chris Paul and James Harden were going to be able to share the rock as well. So something's got to give, and this is the most important coaching season that Mike D'Antoni's had to date in his 71 years on planet Earth. So there's a lot that's going to be going on. Like I said, I don't know. I like this from the fact that we don't have Chris Paul anymore, because I think that he's only going to get worse considering his age, as long as his injuries continue to happen, because last year really kind of shed a lot of light on what that has turned out to be. But Russell Westbrook is 30 years old now, and a lot of his prime is peaked on athleticism. So I don't think he's, like Nick said, you said earlier before the pod, he's not set to become a free agent until 2023, and it's all signs point to him accepting that $47 million player option. So he'll be 33 by the time his contract ends. So how much is he going to drop off?
Yeah, and a couple more news nuggets just to confirm the ages. Russell Westbrook, 30 years old. Chris Paul, 34 years old. Our reports are out that Houston was Westbrook's preferred destination via Ramona Shelburne. Then also Chris Mannix is reporting, you know, Westbrook and Harden have been really good friends even after the trade. And then The Athletic is reporting that OKC does this deal with full anticipation that Chris Paul will be part of a good team that now has future assets, Gallinari, SGA, Adams, Roberson, Noel, and 8 new first-round picks. So interesting from that perspective. We'll jump on the OKC side. I'll just give my 2 cents on Houston. I guess from the perspective of Chris Paul being 4 years older, you replace him for a guy that's not necessarily an amazing fit. I don't think Chris Paul was necessarily ever an amazing fit either, because Chris Paul and Harden both ball dominant. I guess there's, if I'm being a devil's advocate here, I think in some ways Westbrook can do things offensively to take some of the load off of James Harden. I don't know if they're going to play amazingly well together, but when he's off the court, when you have Westbrook, at least he's somebody on the floor, because Chris Paul, like Dalton mentioned, the last few years injury-wise has not been good. But overall, like Jack mentioned earlier, one of these guys is going to have to pick up defensively, if not both of them. We know that Westbrook is a capable defender when he wants to be. The question is, will he want to be a good defender when he's in Houston?
And that's the thing.
I was just going to say, Dalton, and James, and you'd know this, James Harden's a good post defender. He's not a good on-ball defender, perimeter defender. So, like,
yeah,
there's elements of this game where it's just like, okay, you can talk yourself into it to an extent, like Nick was saying, but, you know, you're talking about the two guys who had the highest usage rates last season, I believe. I think ESPN Stats and Info tweeted that out. So, you know, everyone was talking about when the Chris Paul acquisition first happened, you know, something's got to give with the ball. Literally something actually has to give this time around, because, you know, Russell Westbrook is the worst point guard three-point shooter in the league. You know, he shot sub 30% last season. I don't know what it was, 25, 28%. And now he's got, I think James Harden's got to play a little bit more off ball, which is saying something, because he works best with the ball in his hands and he's attacking the lanes and drawing contact and, you know, gets that E field goal percentage back up and getting to the line a lot. You know, D'Antoni's going to have a fun time in the offseason. And yeah, like you said, Nick, interesting to hear that Houston was his preferred destination when I think, you know, the Miami talk was probably stronger than ever. But maybe the relationship with James Harden spoke volumes, and their, you know, established relationship that already had in OKC. You know, they were obviously, you know, on the verge of a championship together with Kevin Durant back there. But we could do a podcast on this one for hours and hours on end.
Yeah. Go ahead, Nick. Jack, you're right. But I guess it doesn't really hold too much weight, but I guess it does speak a little bit to Harden and Westbrook must believe that this can work if Houston was his preferred destination, because I can probably believe that Russell Westbrook doesn't get traded to a team that he doesn't want to go to, just out of the respect of the Thunder. But then again, who knows with how NBA, whatever they call them now, the general manager, not general managers, but whatever the new term for owners is and the players.
Governors.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, Jack, like you said, Harden is a great post defender, and he can be a good defender when he wants to be. I mean, he was second in deflections only behind Paul George this season, and he was up there for steals for guards across the league. But it's just a matter of mental lapses. It's kind of the same thing with Russell Westbrook to an extent, because they both get beat on backdoor cuts. They both show more they put more emphasis on offense than anything else, but something has to give. Chris Paul has been revered as a good defensive point guard, which he has been. He's made multiple first-team all-defenses. But, however, it seems like last year when you watch him, the age is really starting to take a toll. I don't know if it was just the hamstring problem or the fact that he really is losing a lot of his athleticism that he's had earlier in the season and earlier in the career, I should say. It's just it wasn't there last year. Getting beat off the dribble to have Capella have to try to save them at the rim is something that I hadn't seen really from Chris Paul at any time during his illustrious NBA career.
Another interesting thing, just to throw it out there, Westbrook can get them a little bit more involved in terms of transition offense, get some more easy buckets for them. You know, James Harden likes to slow it down, run the ISO a lot. Westbrook will attack a little bit quicker. But to Jack's point, three-point shooting needs a pickup from him. And I agree. I think off-ball-wise, James Harden can do a little bit more work off-ball. Maybe that will relieve some of his pressure in terms of his workload. Because last few seasons, I think we'd all agree, when he came to the postseason, he didn't necessarily have the energy or the stamina to play at the highest level.
Should we go through all the picks that OKC bloody has now?
Yeah, let's see what they got in their treasure chest. Now they have the biggest treasure chest.
Yeah, and I mean, Sam Presti. I mean, normally, you know, GMs of the year, executive of the year, don't go to guys who just trade away their stars. But, man, Sam Presti certainly has an argument for it. They have their 2020 own top 20 protected. They had Denver top 10 protected in 2020. 2021, they have their own and a Miami plus a pick swap with Houston. In 2022, they have their own. They have a top 14 protected. And then the Clippers. 2023, they have their own plus a pick swap with the Clippers and a Miami lottery protected. That one obviously has been made its way around quite a bit. And 2024, they have their own Houston and the Clippers first round picks. 2025, they have their own plus a pick swap with Houston and the Clippers. And in 2026, they have their own Houston and the Clippers. It's a mouthful, lads.
Hats off to Sam Presti. I mean, like, you go from at the end of the season, okay, we're looking at a healthy shoulder from Russell Westbrook and Paul George leading a deep playoff run for the Thunder potentially. Now it's like, okay, we have gone into a full-on, not necessarily rebuild. I mean, they have taken a couple steps back, but they do have some good assets in SGA and Danilo Gallinari and company, but they have really set themselves up for the future, and that's absolutely amazing what Presti's done.
And just if I did the math correctly, that's 11 picks in the next 7 years and four swaps. And one of those swaps is like a double swap, so I'm just counting it as one swap. So that's a lot. Like, I mentioned this when they did the Paul George trade. There's a possibility Sam Presti, like, they have Chris Paul, they have Steven Adams, they have SGA. They could flip these picks and trade another player and all of a sudden be back in contention if they really wanted to go that route. They could still go rebuilding route, but there's an option here for them to trade for multiple players across the league.
Isn't Gallinari an expiring as well?
Correct. $23 million expiring.
I mean, Sam Presti has a real nucleus here to sort of rival. We've sort of talked about the Clippers and the Nets, those sort of teams, having the assets. When you have assets, you can really attack and build a new roster in a lot of different ways. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a starting star point guard on the rise. And you have Nerlens Noel on a really cheap contract too. I think that OKC... Obviously, it's going to be a little bit harder for them to sell tickets. I think that, you know, being that sort of lesser market team, you lose your two stars. Russell Westbrook is a god there. But Chris Paul, I believe, after the Hurricane Katrina that happened, you know, built a really good relationship in Oklahoma City. So I think that, you know, he's going to be, you know, the new sort of star guy that sells tickets. And, you know, like you mentioned, Nick, what happens with Steven Adams and such. But it's hard to sort of analyze it as a whole because it's so overwhelming.
I mean, OKC has put themselves in a position for the long term and the short term. They really can go whatever way they want to go. Do you want to try and be some? I mean, even still, you can hold on to all these picks, run this year with Gallinari, Adams, and Chris Paul, and you're probably a competitive team. I don't think you're a playoff team in the West. You're probably like just missing out, but you're at least competitive. And then, like you guys have mentioned, you can possibly flip these. I think it's also kind of like problem. I'm kind of sad for Chris Paul, you know, just kind of the way his career has gone. Cause I think it's kind of like solidifies the fact that we're not going to see Chris Paul ever win a ring. I mean, granted, I guess he could in year, you know, when he's 36, he could possibly sign on with a contender, but now Chris Paul is going to, I don't want to say waste away, but he'll be in OKC to end this. I mean, OKC has set themselves up. I mean, who would have thought, like Jack mentioned, that we'd be talking about Sam Presti for executive of the year after trading Westbrook and Paul George. And I mean, even Jeremy Grant to a degree. That wasn't they got a pick back for that as well. So this has been an extremely strange time for the Oklahoma City Thunder because it was like this team was just quiet and was like, we're just going to run it back. And now it's, hey, guys, completely new bunch. But, man, it's a lot to digest.
It also they had extreme value for both guys, like to the highest extent. Like, you and I, Corey, were just talking on the outlet. Like, I wasn't even sure if they'd get a first-round pick for Westbrook. Like, I wasn't even sure. And they got two first-round picks, not to say they're going to be amazing. And they got two pick swaps. And then Paul George, We know that trade, they got the highest possible value because it was almost like a combo trade for Paul George and Kawhi. So it's crazy he walked away with this. Like, if you had asked me in the beginning of the offseason, like, what I thought he could get for Paul George and Westbrook, I definitely wouldn't have told you the rights to, seven picks and then the swaps for, like, four.
It also goes to mention that, like, I don't think necessarily OKC is done per se just yet, because, I mean, there's been rumors that Steven Adams, they're looking to send him off. Andre Roberson's another guy who could serve a good defensive need for a title or a team with title aspirations. So who's to say OKC's done? I mean, Presti, it seems like he always has another card up his sleeve. And we saw it with the getting Paul George for the Victor Oladipo package back in right when it happened back before the not this past season, but the one before that. I mean, there's so much more that could happen. And I don't think that OKC's done in the slightest, because it seems like Sam Presti's always 2-3 moves ahead.
Dalton, I'll throw something at you. This is just purely off the whim. Does this make the Houston Rockets a better team going into 2019-20?
I think so. I you know, that may be a little bit of a false hope optimism, but I truly think it does, and here's why. Chris Paul, I love his role for the Rockets, but it seemed like you watch him this past season, there were so many times when he was on the court where he just didn't look like he fit. The role that they want Chris Paul to play just wasn't the level of play that he was able to reach. The mid-range game is really where he gets the bread and butter. He's not as athletic to blow by guys like he was earlier in his career. I mean, he had a hell of a drop-off between 2017-2018 to 2018-2019. So I think you get a more athletic guard who Harden is fond of as well. So you make him happy. You don't get rid of P.J. Tucker or Eric Gordon. You still have them as assets to maybe even get better. Who knows? Like I said, there's a lot to be done. But I'm not sure that I like the fit, but I have to applaud Daryl Morey for at least going out to trying to put themselves in a position to win a title. So I think it makes them marginally better, in the sense that I think Westbrook is better than Paul if you stand them both right up back-to-back.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think in the situation Houston is, you know, last year when they lost to the Warriors without Kevin Durant, it was kind of the writing was on the wall. This team is probably not going to win a championship. Not saying Westbrook makes them that much better, but it is a changeup. There is a possibility things could work out. I know you're about to say something, Corey. What do you got?
And I want to say, too, just thinking about the schematics of the team, this is arguably the ideal fit for a guy like Russell Westbrook, where he's surrounded by actual shooters. We've never seen Westbrook able to run in the court with all of these shooters on the perimeter around him. He's had this mixed botch crew in OKC for a lot of years. This will fit the kind of mode of him just getting to kind of run loose and dish it out to these corner guys who can shoot threes. So I think that also is a plus for Houston, that you might get the best version of Russell Westbrook in the open court because he actually is surrounded by shooters this time.
One of those shooters could be James Harden. I mean, we talk about Harden or Westbrook's going to have to play off the ball. It looks like Harden's going to assume more of those responsibilities, but Russell Westbrook makes his name getting to the rim. And, you know, a lot of teams crash down on him, so who knows how much space that leaves for a guy like James Harden, if any. But if they're going to make sure the Harden's held, I mean, you have P.J. Tucker in the corner. You have Eric Gordon, Austin Rivers. I mean, there's a lot of guys that Houston can throw out there. I think that kind of really solidifies the need to maybe add another shooter.
Yeah, they need shooting big time. That's for sure. But Tim McMahon just tweeted as well that apparently James Harden was a driving force in this deal. They wanted to reunite and made it happen despite some questions about basketball fit now that Harden is so ball dominant. I'm sure you guys remember this. I can't remember which game it was. I think it was when they got knocked out against Golden State, when James Harden was like, I know it's going to happen, but I can't tell you guys, in that sort of post-game presser. Was he just forecasting this, you know, months and months ago, the Chris Paul sort of had to get out of there? He's a bad teammate. You know, he's you know, Kendrick Perkins is on Twitter now calling him a bad teammate, despite the fact, you know, because he has this revered sort of personality. So people are calling out Chris Paul. Does his reputation go down? There's so many things to analyze.
Yeah, I think you're pretty much spot on. You know, I think the reason why Chris Paul and James Harden were able to coexist in their first seasons is because Paul's level of play didn't necessarily drop off to where his personality was fitting his level of play. So the success, I mean, I'm a firm believer that success masks over and serves as a Band-Aid for a lot of wounds and really kind of pushes a lot of things under the rug. But when a lot of adversity hits and you have tough times with Chris Paul going through injury. I mean, it was like Harden was out to dry. He had to go on this huge historical offensive run to even keep the Rockets afloat in the Western Conference. I mean, it's almost like Harden was like, okay, this is not the same Chris Paul that I wanted to play with, that we brought on and sent so many assets to the Clippers for. I think it's almost time. It looks like all the media members that were talking about the severed relationship had seen some light to it.
Yeah, there was I'm going to paraphrase. I don't remember the exact words. It was something along the lines Chris Paul was calling out James Harden. Maybe it was like getting back on defense. And then James Harden was like, why don't you worry about beating your man? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you're not wrong, but you don't have to go there.
Yeah, well, that's what he said. So I think there was tension, and it's a great point by Dalton that Chris Paul has a big attitude, and not in necessarily a bad way when he's playing at a high level. You know, if someone's playing at a high level or someone's kind of bossing you around, but they're working just as hard as you, you're not going to take it as hard. But when someone's bossing you around and they're not doing a great job or working that hard, or their just talent level isn't there, you know, you're going to kind of look at it and be like, bro, I know what I'm doing. You don't know what you're doing. You can't even do what you're supposed to do on the court. I can do what I can do. Like,
I mean, the simple fact is Chris Paul got older.
Yeah. 34 is old in the NBA for a star. Like, you're eventually going to hit a drop off sometime in your 30s.
Especially when you are a guy of Chris Paul's height and the amount of injuries he's had over the course of his career, it's more likely a guy like him breaks down sooner and quicker than other guys. And I think this last year in particular, we kind of saw that, you know, the toll that his career has taken on him. And I think you add in what Dalton said, the fact that things got tough, they were losing. And Chris Paul kind of, I feel like, could see the writing on the wall for himself to a degree, and then sees the fact that he's being pushed out of the offense and being just another guy to James Harden. And, you know, we've talked about ego when we talk about Melo, you know, the banana boat in general. These are a bunch of proud guys. I think all four of these guys, Melo never to this point has accepted the back role. Dwayne Wade, like, accepted it the best he could, but then got out because he knew that once he dropped off too much, it just wasn't going to be fun for a guy of his level. And now we're seeing it with Chris Paul. It's all about how you maneuver that ego when your skill starts to deplenish.
Yeah, and go ahead, Jack.
I was just going to say that in the chat, Adrian Dizon, to change tack and sort of go back to Nick's point a little bit, Steven Adams goes where?
I think the moving of Westbrook means that they keep him more often. I think he stays a little longer just because, I mean, you don't want to full on sell out to where OKC is just unable to watch or sell out, because at the end of the day, it's a business. I mean, you're going to be losing money if you don't fill seats. So you want to at least be competitive because you have guys like Gallinari and SGA. And if you decide to keep Chris Paul, you can be somewhat competitive and put yourself in a good spot for the future as well.
If they go the trading route, sorry to cut you off, Jack. I wasn't looking at the screen. Boston would be the one team that kind
of. That's what I was going to say. But then that makes no. They should have done that, you know, obviously in the first place. And Clint Capella was so heavily on the trade market. You know, he was almost the guy. It was almost fait accompli that he was going to leave. And now I kind of like him, you know, next to Russ, despite the fact that he is going to have to learn how to box out and box out damn well.
Thank you. Yes. Amen.
I just had a thought that there is not a lot of people left in the market, right? And OKC kind of needs some pieces. So, like, I could totally see them just, like, bringing Melo in, get in this mixed botch crew where Chris Paul is just doing that, like, like, fake laugh.
Come on, Corey.
But to kind of go back to what we were talking about, like, so hear me out on this one. When I'm trying to put myself in the footsteps of Daryl Morey, I'm thinking of it like this. Yes, you're banking a lot on Russell Westbrook being able to stay in his prime as long as he can. 33 years old, he's probably going to see a decline, hopefully not as much. But, I mean, we still see guys playing at a high level at 33. But to play the devil's advocate, yes, Russell might decline, but how much further is Chris Paul going to decline? Father Time really took its toll on Chris Paul at age 34. He's not getting any younger. His hamstrings aren't getting any stronger. I mean, we saw a legitimate step back in his play and what he could do offensively. And we all know that Houston wasn't going to win with Chris Paul unless they were going to get a third star. And it doesn't look like that was going to be the case that Jimmy Butler went to Miami. So getting a guy like Russell Westbrook, I actually kind of applaud Daryl Morey for at least putting his eggs in somewhat of a hopeful basket.
Hopeful basket.
Yeah, I think the one thing that would be pretty scary though for the Houston side is they did give up less. Like, and there's still a chance that they won't necessarily be. No, they'll probably play up as long as they have James Harden and a competent team. But it doesn't mean that they're not going to be a relatively good pick. And this team feels like they haven't had a rookie in like 5 years.
Oh no, they have the last first round pick was
Jumping
Sam Decker.
Fun times. Jay brought up Jay brought up the fact that maybe, and I think this has been brought up around the wings as well, even before the Russell Westbrook trade, maybe Beal could be in some sort of package for Steven Adams. I don't see it happening, but with the for some reason ownership in OKC is pressuring Sam Presti to go, look, we want to maintain relevance. We want to, you know, at least make the playoffs next season. You're making the playoffs with Chris Paul and Bradley Beal and then a mismatch of parts because Bradley Beal is a really, really good player. I think that it makes sense on paper, but I would much and you add in Gallo as well. I think it makes a lot of sense, but I wouldn't. I think if you're OKC, you're gonna be a bit more patient with this.
I also feel like if you were to go get Bradley Beal, you wouldn't have moved Westbrook. You would have kept Westbrook with Beal long term and got rid of Adams. I feel like rather than getting a Chris Paul and Beal. I mean, granted. Maybe not. I think Nick, you I don't think you agree.
You have extra picks now, so now you have picks that you don't care because, like, let's be realistic. You're not going to use 11 picks in the next 7 years. Right. Like, there's a good chance that you just don't want that many young players. So I think if I'm trading for Bradley, I'm keeping Steven Adams. There's enough contracts on OKC to make it work where they could hypothetically trade 6 first-round picks for Bradley Beal and still have a surplus of first-round picks and then roll out a lineup that has, you know, Chris Paul, SGA, Bradley Beal, Gallinari, and Steven Adams. That's a playoff team.
Yeah.
So, like, I think there's a possibility. I'm the most intrigued about, like, what is going to happen with Chris Paul. Like, Dalton's right. He's probably going to decline a little bit more, and then they're stuck with that contract. I don't know if they don't have a good season as you try to get bought out. Like, I don't even know how you go about buying a contract that has 130 million left on it.
Yeah, that was brought up in one of my group chats. They were like, oh, Chris Paul is not going to want to play. They're going to have to buy him out or waive him. I'm like, I don't know if you can. That's a lot of money to waive him out.
And you don't do that purely out of respect. I mean, you can respect a guy and buy out like a maybe like a $10 million contract. That's understandable. But
47 million the last year, 44 million. You're gonna buy that out?
I don't even care. You don't even buy out Russell Westbrook for that much if he's at that age in this thing, just out of respect. Because I mean, you can respect a guy, but you're not going to screw yourself and eat up all that money just because you respect him. I mean, this is like I said, at the end of the day, this is a business, and the owner and the governors are looking at it in one way, and that's from a money perspective.
There could be a situation where Chris Paul is extremely competitive that he leaves a lot of money on the table, but it would still be an excessive buyout for OKC to have. They would have to enter full rebuild where they just really don't care about their cap space.
I mean, Dalton was sort of saying earlier that Houston are better. Where do they rank among the Western Conference elite right now?
Well, I think you're looking anywhere from third on down. I definitely don't think they're as good as the LA teams. Maybe you might be able to put them up with the Lakers, depending on how that roster of mixed bag parts fits. But I think that the Clippers are kind of that solid favorite right now. It really just depends on how well D'Angelo and Steph Curry fit. But I think that Houston's better than Golden State at the moment. So I'm looking at third right now. But
they're not better than Utah, though. They're not probably better than Denver, though.
Well, why do I keep forgetting about Denver? I don't know what's going on. I'd say if I had to look, I'd probably put Denver at third. I like what Utah is doing, but until I see it with Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell, it's yet to be seen. But four or five, I'm pretty confident in. So
I think I would go somewhere between the 4 and 6 range. Because I think, once again, I mean, we saw the Western Conference come down to the final game of the season last year. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same story this upcoming year. Because I think Denver and Utah to me are probably the teams that I would want to put over Houston right now. So I'd probably have Houston somewhere at 6 because I think the LA teams, Denver, Utah, maybe 5th. I think 5th would probably be about right. At this point in time, it's looking at the rest of the layout in the West. But then again, if you, it depends on what you think about the Warriors and what they're running with. So I think the Warriors could be just as good with a D'Lo Curry backcourt with Draymond to at least keep them afloat till Klay gets back in late March.
The Rockets won 53 games last season, and they finished in the fourth seed. I think that they almost stay pat, if anything. I think that that's their best case scenario in my eyes. The Jazz won 50 games. I think the Jazz win a couple more games and become better than the Rockets. The Thunder, who finished sixth, will take a drop off. The Spurs, who knows, but they're certainly taking a drop off. The Clippers will take a massive jump. Obviously, how they manage Paul George and Kawhi Leonard throughout the regular season. I don't think they're going to be a regular season team. I think that the Nuggets will be. The Blazers finished with the same record as the Rockets. The changes that they made, does that make them any better? I think that they might take a mini step back. I think their ceiling is second at the very, very best. If all things go well and they suddenly just work this thing out and it's a schematic fit on both ends of the floor, I think that that is their absolute ceiling. But I think at the end of the day, you're not playing for regular season and regular season wins. I think Daryl Morey needs to realize that. And I think you've got two guys in Russell Westbrook and James Harden who love playing in the regular season, love getting their stats, love putting up their numbers. But they might need to take a step back and realize, okay, maybe we need to do this whole load management thing because, you know, you want to be healthy come, you know, round one, round two. And, you know, with the Western Conference as stacked as it is, and we have barely even mentioned the Lakers and what could happen with them and, you know, touched on the Warriors and such. You know, it's going to be an absolute shit show.
I would say that that's what Houston needs to do. And I know James Harden and Russell Westbrook both in the past have been like, oh, we don't want to rest. No, you guys should probably play 70 games. You should each take 10 games off. There's not a it's not a necessity for both of you to play because both guys have won games on their own. And it's in a situation.
All right.
I think it makes a lot of sense. The way you made the most moves, this is going to be the
fit. Yeah, I think you lagged a little bit there, Nick. We missed what you said.
Okay. So for the teams that probably have made, you know, the most moves and the fit isn't necessarily there for this team, it's going to probably take them at least a couple months to work this together. Where you look at a team like Utah, yeah, they're bringing in a lot of pieces, but those pieces kind of gel on paper. It makes sense from a basketball perspective. We're here. We already discussed it for the first couple minutes of the show. There is a chance where this might not necessarily fit and they have to work things out. So I wouldn't be that high on their regular season win total. I'll be interested to see what they do in the playoffs because, like I've said, you know, I think Harden's issue in the past has been just he doesn't have the stamina deep in the playoffs. So I don't know. I honestly don't know what to think about it until we really see it on paper. I mean, on the court.
Yeah.
Should we look at it from, you know, someone's also brought up, I think Adrian Dyson brought up the fact that possibly a Steven Adams trade to the Sacramento Kings. I think that that makes a little bit of sense, but obviously, imagine. But I think that the West is so clustered right now, and you know, I don't know what I think the floor of a team like Houston is much greater than a team like the Utah Jazz, like the Los Angeles Clippers, because they have all that depth still on their roster. The Lakers, I think, have a similar sort of floor if. You know, one of Davis or LeBron are out for 20-plus games, then things could go certainly awry there, despite the fact that DeMarcus Cousins is on some new cool diet and is looking slim. I think the combustibility still remains in Houston. And, you know, I think that James Harden's role, I think, is the most important thing going into next season because Russell Westbrook can't necessarily how can he get better as a player? He can shoot the ball better. I mean, he might get more open looks with the gravity that James Harden gives him. But we've seen James Harden play in so many different ways across his career, obviously being a six-man in OKC, then being a sort of, you know, combo guard, and then being the full-blown floor general that Mike D'Antoni has turned him into. So he has malleability in his game to change in his sort of role. Obviously, we've seen reports the fact that, you know, he's motivated and wants this to work. You know, he's going to have to change the most, I think, more than Russell Westbrook does because I don't know how Russell Westbrook really can change, obviously, with the sort of limits to his game in general.
It's one of those weird dynamics where when they first started off, you had Westbrook as like the alpha and or at least there was who's the Batman around between him and KD. And Harden then went to Houston. He became the alpha of Houston. And now you're having Westbrook, who's always been an alpha, going with a new alpha in James Harden. I think what you're saying, this goes right along with what you're saying, is how do these two coexist when you have these two personalities? And, like, you know, again, like, and this is, again, Nick saying you have to see what happens on the court, but, like, late game situations, these are both guys who want the ball in their hands for that final shot.
Yeah.
And is Westbrook going to allow James Harden to get those shining moments? Like, I just don't know. He didn't really let Paul George get those shining moments a lot of the time.
I can't wait for Russell Westbrook to go 3-for-12 in the fourth quarter and lose this game. That's just going to be so, so fun.
But oh, man.
I think just touching on what Jack was saying, Harden, I think, can actually be really good playing off ball because he can play reactionary to what Westbrook is doing, where you throw him the ball at the three-point line. You have to respect his three-point shot, and it's not just at the line. He's like Steph. He can take a couple steps back, or he can kind of drive to the rim, and teams aren't going to be able to send as much attention to him because Westbrook's going to draw it to the other side of the court. So I think, like Jack said, his skill set, he's able to adapt a lot better than Westbrook, where if you're asking me the ideal situation for this offense next year, Westbrook has the ball in his hands, running a pick and roll with Clint Capella. You got Tucker and Gordon in both corners, and then you have Harden on the opposite wing. There's spacing there for you to really attack, but obviously James Harden, who has been an MVP candidate for like what seems like the last 5 years, is going to have the ball in his hands less.
It just kind of speaks to the relationship that Westbrook and Harden have to even try this out. Because, sure. I mean, you could just very well run this back with Chris Paul trying to bank on his health. But for Russell Westbrook to want to come to a team like Houston, where everyone knows that this is Harden's team, this is Harden's city. But not only that, this Harden has the ball a lot in his hands, and he's kind of the dominant force. That just kind of shows you. I think I watched the 30 for 30 that kind of explained James Harden's road. He kind of said he was distraught when he got traded from OKC because of the bond he had with guys like Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. So I think we constantly overlook sometimes the relationships that some players have. I mean, we see Kevin Durant and Kyrie. They believe they can make it work in Brooklyn. Kawhi and Paul George and the Staples Center. But this is just going to be a different scenario because the usage rates are so high, because it's basically almost like the same type of player in a nutshell. It's kind of on a different scale because making it work is going to be that much more difficult because they're two ball dominant guys that have led their respective franchises for quite some time.
Jay's got a question about contracts in general, but I want to like touch on staying with the sort of Chris Paul and James Harden sort of relationship. When they were at their peak, the Houston Rockets were probably one of the best regular season teams ever. Like, we're looking at offensive rating, all these sort of metrics. They were simply insane. Russell Westbrook and James Harden aren't going to reach that level.
They're not. I don't think that 2017-18 Rockets season, I mean, I don't think it's just a testament to Harden and Paul because they were great. The role players around them, I mean, were hitting on all cylinders. I mean, Capella played his role. You had Ariza and Mbamute playing their roles to a T. I mean, you can go down the line and talk about the role players they had. I mean, there's going to be a lot of I think it's going to take a lot more time for Russ and Harden to gel than it did for Harden and CP3. But I think it comes down to the role players as well because, I mean, we can talk about how well these two guys mesh. But like last season, it came down to role players.
Yeah, I think just to touch on Jack's point of being a really good regular season team, that team we saw the first year there, you know, when they matched up against Golden State and they pushed them 7 games, that was probably the closest we saw anybody actually beat a full strength Golden State team. Toronto didn't beat them full strength though.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And they're 3-2 on them.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Paul doesn't go down and they win that series. Like, this is a completely different thing we're talking about right now. This isn't even, you know, a discussion. So it's crazy how just small things can happen.
I think that there was I'm sure you guys probably listened to it as well, the Woj pod where he interviewed the Utah Jazz GM. And he said that, you know, we were like a step away, you know, but we realized that you need to be, you know, a top five in offensive and defensive rating. I don't know if the Rockets are certainly going to be there. They might be offensively. I think that they've got a lot of offensive talent. And I'm going to enjoy the pick-and-roll combinations. I think the pick-and-roll combinations with Capella and Westbrook will be even better than Adams and Westbrook because I think, you know, Capella has more, you know, conventional athleticism in that sort of sense. And like you were sort of – we've touched on the transition offense opportunities as well. James Harden loves feeding Capella, and Westbrook will certainly do the same as well. But defensively, this team doesn't – it doesn't improve. They've already lost, you know, their sort of defensive guru, as Dalton knows, and Jeff Bezdelic, to the New Orleans Pelicans. Where is this team defensively?
Middle of the pack, I think, yeah, is what you're looking at. I mean, James Harden definitely can change the way he plays defense in terms of his mindset. I mean, Capella is still a pretty decent defender. I mean, PJ Tucker, we know, is probably one of the most underrated defenders in the league. But I think that the Rockets need to add defense. I think whether they do need to add a backup center, I think that Tyson Chandler is a good fit there. They have to add some more pieces. They, by all means, should not be finished in making moves, regardless of how small it is, but they have to add some sort of defense, because even when Jeff was coaching here at the Rockets, I mean, there were the woes there as well. I mean, it's been a problem all last season, even when Jeff was here. So I think it goes deeper than just a coach. It first starts out with the realization for James Harden, and also incorporates other personnel that are capable defenders when you stick around guys like Harden and Westbrook.
I think, and just to reiterate it, you know, teams will generally hunt the mismatch when it comes to defenses. So they'll put Steph Curry in the pick and roll a million times and force him to really, you know, tax his energy on that end of the floor and, you know, utilize the mismatch. There are now two guys on Houston that you can do that to. And I think that is really going to stretch them. And I think they're really going to have to be defensively engaged. I remember probably Russell Westbrook's best defensive game that I've seen him play was against the OKC Thunder. And it was a one-on-one against James Harden. So, you know, he's going to need to bring that energy on a much more consistent basis, because they don't have elite defensive talent there right now. Yes, you know, PJ Tucker is really, really good. Yes, Clint Capella can be a good regular season player. Eric Gordon is capable, but they don't have, you know, Trevor Ariza at his best. They don't have the sort of depth that sort of, you know, Dalton was just talking about with Luke and Bamute, these sort of guys. You know, I'm worried for them defensively. You know, you can't be a Cleveland Cavaliers team that finishes like first in offensive rating and like last defensively and expect to make the finals. I don't think you can in this stacked NBA right now. It could happen, and I could be proven wrong, but I certainly think that there is plenty of issues that need to be worked out.
Yeah, defensively is a concern. I think regardless, like going to a season, James Harden and Russell Westbrook have to be better defensively. If not in the regular season, they have to be way better in the playoffs. Like we said, and you mentioned, Jack, against Houston, against James Harden, Westbrook flashed some really good defensive potential. It's just like he's not engaged at that level all the time. Maybe having a lesser offensive load will help him get to that, but it's obviously more of a mental mindset.
And I think then it's been touched on for Russell Westbrook for eons and eons, and you know there's been plenty of articles written about it as well. He needs to become a better off-ball player. He needs to lay some screens. You know, I think that in the crux of when, you know, Carmelo Anthony was there, Paul George was there, everyone was just like, why doesn't Russ just move off the ball, lay some screens for these two guys who know how to shoot the ball? If they learn how to sort of take a step back and be a little more selfless in the way they play the game, which I think James Harden has shown before in his previous history, I think that they can be a pretty special offensive team. But at the same time, you know, because Russell Westbrook, I think, can be a really good off-ball cutter, I still think he has athleticism. Despite all these surgeries, he still is one of the probably best athletes we have seen, maybe not even in basketball, but in the history of sport. He's an absolute marvel when it comes to that sort of thing. And he still has it, despite the fact that he will be waning and age stops for no one. But I think Russell Westbrook needs to do a lot. And, you know, I'm skeptical, but I'm hopeful for the likes of Dalton.
Yeah, I mean, if you come to Houston with the aspiration to win a title, Jack, you don't need to have that change. You have to have that change. Like, there is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If you want to win an NBA title, especially with the parity that this next season is going to incorporate into, I mean, the West is going to be absolutely stacked. I mean, trying to pinpoint a team that's going to win the West is like kind of throwing darts at a board right now. I mean, there's so much interesting stuff going around, so much confusion. But if you want to take the next step, if you want to make this thing in Houston work, you have to do something individually, and it all starts with Russell Westbrook. I mean, Westbrook, you can make it work from a talent perspective all you want, but the ceiling is going to depend on how Westbrook adapts to this change. Because, I mean, he spent his whole career in OKC, and he's really developed into this super alpha dog. Now that he has to go and he has to really look deep inside of what he wants to make out of this, if he wants to win a title, he has to change.
Jay's brought up a sort of more broad concept and broad topic. aren't these recent moves arguments against supermaxes and general and caps in general? What do you, I mean, there's been a lot of talk, obviously, with the CBA and all this stuff happening, but now we've sort of seen two supermax guys be traded and moved. What do you guys sort of think on that more, you know, existential sort of topic?
Corey, you jump in first.
I don't know if it matters that much. I mean, all, the only thing this has shown is that supermaxes are movable, right? Okay. You can get the max contract and you can still be moved, even if you're Chris Paul, even if you're Russell Westbrook. So that gives hope to the Wizards that they want to move John Wall when he's eventually healthy. I think that's what this kind of sets up. But it does set up the it at least shows that there's a facade around the fact that if you give a guy a supermax, they stay with you, that he's not necessarily going to stay with you. I think that's what this shows, is that it doesn't, even though I think the thought of the supermax is you can give a guy a supermax to retain him and keep him, but it doesn't mean that the player in the player empowerment movement, which we're in, doesn't go to said team and say, I'm not happy, I want to go out. And then you go, oh shit, well, I don't want this guy to stew on my roster for 3 years, pissed off and be miserable. Now I'm going to trade this guy. I think that's what we've seen more so than anything. And granted, you know, the Westbrook, Chris Paul situation is a little bit different because neither guy necessarily asked to be traded. Westbrook was a victim of circumstance. And Chris Paul was an even bigger victim of circumstance. But I think it definitely showed that there's some holes into giving the supermax at this point in time. It's not a sure thing whether you give a guy $44 million a year and he's going to be with you the rest of his career.
And Corey, I think you can kind of, to kind of piggyback off what you're saying, you can kind of draw the line in the sand when we talk about mutual understandings right now between governors and players. We kind of realize that loyalty is kind of is often misconstrued when you talk about this, because it's a business in a bunch of different aspects. Like, owners are going to put themselves in a position to win regardless of loyalty, in a sense, but players are going to do what's best for themselves regardless of loyalty. So I think we're starting to kind of finally stray away from this fact that loyalty kind of topples everything, because it doesn't. There's a lot of moving parts in the NBA, whether that's from fit, circumstance, finances. I mean, there's so many things going on. We can't really pinpoint loyalty as like the predominant cause for people staying or leaving. So, I mean, you saw it with Durant in OKC. I mean, he goes for a better fit for himself. Kawhi goes for a better opportunity in LA. I mean, their loyalty's not it's a thing, but it's not the thing like people think it is.
It's really not strong. I think we've seen that with Danny Ainge getting rid of Isaiah Thomas a couple of years ago. I mean, that's kind of like the first moment of loyalty that we saw, where it's like an ownership to a player. And then with Paul George and the Pacers, and then, you go down and down the line of players kind of just showing that, I mean, loyalty matters. I mean, Westbrook was loyal to the Thunder, and the Thunder were loyal to Westbrook in the fact that they were able to get him out of OKC when they decided to move Paul George. I mean, that's a sign of loyalty, but I think you're right, Dalton. The way that we kind of push this loyalty narrative in the NBA, it seems like we're going to have to stop pushing it as hard.
I think Damian Lillard's the sole survivor of the sort of
right.
loyalty.
Yeah, basically.
But there's a lot of guys. I mean, you can – Harden's one of those guys, I think, for now. I mean, Jack, I mean, you talked about Damian Lillard. I mean, do you ever see Lillard leaving Portland at all? I mean, the guy seems like he's going to be there for life.
I think anything could happen. Like, this league is proven that anything literally can happen. And if Damian Lillard wants to go to the Lakers 1 year and team up with Anthony Davis, I can see that happening. But the sort of Supermax conversation for me – it's funny because Chris Paul was the architect of this, being one of the heads of the Players Association. And now it's sort of come back to bite him in a weird sort of sense. You know, you think it provides you that stability, that loyalty that we sort of talked about. But I think these sort of supermaxes and the salary cap in general, I think is a good measure to provide that parity. And we've seen that this season. We're seeing now that there are 10, 11 teams that can win, you know, the championship. So I think that there needs to be those measures so that teams can have hope, you know, the draft system and all the rest of it. But I think that there needs to be a greater avenues for, because right now the sort of salary cap system benefits the superstars. You know, it benefits the 1% of the league, so to speak. But the guys like, you know, Danny Green, Trevor Ariza, the vet minimum guys, they're sort of left in the wanes. You know, it seems to me that the Players Association caters a lot to the superstars, the top 20 in the league. But on the other side of the foot, you know, the guys that make up the roster and that win you championships, that Dalton has mentioned, the depth guys, they're sort of left in the wanes a little bit. They're still obviously multimillionaires, but I like the tangent that we've gone on, and thank you, Jay, for the question.
I mean, Danny Green and Trevor Ariza just got banked, though. Danny Green just got 15 a year, and
right.
He got 12 a year. But I get what you're saying, that it benefits them. The random thought about the Supermax, it is so stupid you could Supermax somebody who's, like, over 34 years old. Like, there's no chance that Chris Paul is ever going to play up to $40 million. Like, there should be an age limit in terms of when you can Supermax somebody, because players just aren't going to be that good into their mid-30s. Like, it's just – unless you're LeBron James.
Talk about the salary cap. Imagine if the Lakers actually do complete the trade for Kawhi. I mean, think about the rest of their roster minus the four of Leonard, Davis, Kuzma, and LeBron. I mean, you're bringing in us four into the roster as well. I mean, we're playing for sandwiches after the game. I mean,
I'm playing for autographs.
I'm playing for follows on Twitter. I mean, like, you literally have to get these guys for the bare minimum in exchange for winning. That's it.
And, you know, I think Rob from Brooklyn made a good point about, you know, Mike Conley as well, sort of, you know, him being traded. You know, I think that we need to realize that, you know, Corey touched on the sort of player empowerment era. And, you know, obviously there's been a lot of talk on podcasts and from Adam Silver and the like. You know, the player empowerment era, it should be the player empowerment era. They're the guys that are providing the product on the court for us to consume, for us to talk about. You know, the whole system around the NBA, the whole business in the NBA shouldn't benefit these billion-dollar owners. It shouldn't benefit Steve Ballmer and James Dolan. You know, it should all be about, and, you know, people complaining about, you know, these trade requests. It's like Paul George coming out. It's like, yep, get me out of here, or else, you know, I'm not going to play for OKC anymore. Who cares? They deserve it. They're the ones that provide the product. They deserve, if we're regular day guys, we get to choose where we want to work. A lot of the time, the draft system and the NBA in general, you don't get to pick where you want to work. Yes, you get compensated, you know, handsomely. But a lot of the other times, you don't, there's a lot of avenues that don't benefit the players. And it should, because it is a player-driven league. They're the ones that sell the jerseys. They're the ones that sell the tickets. I'm not paying to go see Steve Ballmer. I'm not going to pay to see Joseph Tsai. I'm going to pay to see Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Chris Paul, and the like.
I think you bring up a great point there. So it's the opportunity to choose where you play is become more and more of like a focal point. It seems like when we talk about, especially like contracts and stuff like that. I mean, where do you draw the line though? I mean, what is the, like, what's the middle ground? Because I honestly, governors aren't going to go with, oh, you can play with us one season, then you can play with another team this season and another team that season. But like, where does the line stop? Like, what is the future of this controversy for the league?
Yeah, I think it's interesting ground because, I mean, like, you do sign a contract, and if you do sign a contract with like a job of your regular person, you don't always are able to get out of it without maybe giving money back or something along those lines. So there probably has to be some type of ground or some type of rule where, like, hey, you sign a 4-year contract, you got to stay with that team for at least like 2 years or something, because there's no point, because you're just cashing out and getting the money. And I get it. Like, the players are the ones that make everything happen. But if you're signing a contract and there's no purpose to that contract, they absolutely mean nothing. I think that is a factor too. But in the other opposite end of that, players usually don't ask for trades when their team's up for a championship. So if you want to keep good players, be up for a championship, be contending or be in an ascending situation, or treat your players really well. I mean, there's still rare cases like Kevin Durant leaving Golden State, but who knows? Maybe he doesn't get injured and they win. He stays because they didn't force him back or something like that. So we don't know the background information or the details. But I think if you're a competent franchise and you do all the right things and put yourself in a situation to win and keep getting better, players will probably stay.
Winning is one of those things. Like, talk about Damian Lillard, for example. Obviously, them coming to the conference finals, like, you're not going to think it gets worse than this. Like, you're just not. Like, when Paul George and the Pacers were in the Eastern Conference Finals, I never thought I would see Paul George on any other team because we were, like, right there. And then you have multiple disappointing seasons and whatever the case may be, and things change. This is a what have you done for me lately kind of league.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's fair. I mean, guys don't have long windows in terms of their career. They want to be in a championship situation. I don't think it's bad if players request a trade if they don't think they're going to win a chip. But if they're like in a championship situation, they're like, all right, I want to be out. And that's a little different.
Yeah.
And I don't think that happens.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you're competent, you're usually in a good spot.
Yeah.
It's generally Kevin Durant is.
Unless you're Shaq and Kobe, right?
Well, championship windows come and go, though. I mean, teams can have multiple championship windows in like a decade, but like for a certain squad or certain core, I mean, unless you just like have a full out dynasty, I mean, the championship windows only last for like 1 to 3, maybe 4 years, depending on the squad.
Yeah.
I think in that sort of sense, Kevin Durant's the exception to the rule. They were on the fringe of literally, they were a Klay Thompson outburst away from a championship, yet Kevin Durant decides to go to Golden State. And obviously there are a myriad of reasons that he's discussed, and we know about that. You know, but he is obviously, you know, a different kettle of fish. But, you know,
I like that.
does this current system in terms of trade demands and wanting to go to big market teams, are you guys worried about that in terms of the fact of, like, Corey, you go for a small market team in the Pacers, the Houston Rockets, the Brooklyn Nets, they're in the sort of, you know, big market cities. Does that worry you, being as a Pacers fan, that you're not going to be able to keep the likes of Paul George? Obviously, Victor Oladipo was acquired in that exact trade. As a small market team follower, are you worried about the current system and iteration of the NBA?
When have we ever been able to? That would be, I mean, honestly,
that was dark.
If I'm gonna be real here, if you're a small market team, how often does that actually happen? I mean, yes, there's Damian Lillard out there. But at the end of the day, this is just the risk of the league. If you want to keep one of those guys like a Victor Oladipo or a Miles Turner, for example, for the Pacers, you have to have the system, a culture in place around these guys, and you have to be in a winning environment. It's one of the, again, winning cures a lot of things. We've mentioned this on this pod. Winning can hide deficiencies. Winning can hide unhappiness. If you're losing and if you're not producing at a high level, then small market teams will always be on the unfortunate side of things when it comes to this.
Yeah, I think small market teams, they need to build a team. Like you see the Pacers, when they were good, they had a really good team across the board. Utah, we look at them this year, good team across the board. Denver, good team across the board. You have to draft really well. You can't make mistakes, and you see teams make mistakes in small markets, aka the Hornets, and now they're screwed for a long time.
Yeah, sorry, teams, DJ. And the Suns have been screwed for how long? The Knicks have been screwed for how long?
And they're big market.
Yeah, the Knicks are in a different market. The Knicks are a big market.
Right. I think the Pelicans are probably the prime sort of conversation. You know, you look at, they had a franchise altering, game changing, historical superstar in their hands, and they failed. Dell Demps and the front office failed to build around him, and he wanted out, and he wanted to go to LA. I think that the big market thing could almost be, there could be a shift in the fact of what we see Giannis do in the coming years. Now, Giannis, in the sort of, let's speak about that loyalty sort of aspect, you know, the sort of values that he seems to have from what we can gather, I could see him being a Milwaukee Buck for life. But, you know, I would lean more towards him being in Milwaukee long term than him, you know, saying, look, I don't want to do this. I'm going to go to LA and join Anthony Davis. Though I could easily be proven wrong, because, you know, the Bucks could have, you know, this weird season. Middleton could drop off. Bledsoe could continue to be a poor player. But I think the pressure on small market teams is a lot greater than it is for the likes of the New York Knicks, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Clippers, the Nets, these sort of teams, because, you know, those sort of teams, and the Houston Rockets, the Dallas Mavericks, San Antonio, these teams can just sell tickets because they have the brand and the cachet, which I think is a little unfair, but you know, I think with the amount of money that goes around as well, all teams and the popularity of the league in general, being a player-driven league, you know, every team has at least one sort of guy right now. You go to Phoenix, they've got a Devin Booker to sort of, you know, as their beacon of hope. You go to Minnesota, you've got Karl Anthony Towns, who's at least some sort of beacon of hope. So I think that if you have a guy, and even in OKC, you have all these picks, you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, I think hope is as much as it's hope and stars that sell. And to sell hope, you need to have a good front office. You need to have a Sam Presti, a Hinkie, a Sean Marks, a Daryl Morey, a Danny Ainge. So I think that there's a lot of different ways to build teams. And I think Nick really hit the nail on the head. If you're a small market team, the Utah Jazz, you need to build incredibly well through the draft. And they have Gordon Hayward, Rudy Gobert, Devin Booker. None of those guys high lottery picks. You know, Rudy Gobert, end of the first round. Donovan Mitchell, you know, the flyer at pick 13. If you need to draft well, and that puts a lot of pressure on those sort of small market teams.
Yeah, it does. And I think just to touch on some of the small market teams, Anthony Davis was really patient with the Pelicans. He gave them plenty of opportunities to be really good. And I think Giannis, like, there's a reason that he might end up staying, is because by the time he's a free agent, they might be competing for championships for the next couple of years, and that puts them in a good light. Where in the Anthony Davis end, he never even got to compete for a championship. The deepest he ever got was the second round and getting knocked out by Golden State, and he was playing lights out. So, like, You just have to be good. You have to make the right decisions. You can't afford to do what some of these other teams have done. You can't miss picks, and you can't have any of these long-term deals that are really bad.
Kemba Walker's another one of those guys. I mean, he's been in the league, I think, one more year than Anthony Davis. So, I mean, how many opportunities did he give Charlotte an opportunity to build up a roster around him? But, fellas, I got on this pod with my phone because I've been kind of in commute, so I don't have my laptop, and my phone is at 1%. So if you see me just disappear like Spider-Man in Infinity War, just know that I am not in the snap. So
and just touching on the sort of Kemba Walker sort of stuff as well. I was listening to Zach Lowe, Rachel Nichols, and Howard Beck speak about, you know, if they could change things about the NBA, what would they do? And Howard Beck brought up a good point that, you know, owners get like a 10-year sort of term, and then, you know, they can get a vote by like their shareholders or fans or whatever to renew it if they think that they've done a good job, or if not, you know, a new owner comes in. And I think that could, because, you know, I think the NBA Twitter saying of the millennia is, ownership is the biggest competitive advantage. You know, the Knicks, the Suns are the two obvious examples that sort of speak to the fact of what's sort of happening. And I think that James Dolan obviously is second worst owner in the league, but he's at least realized that, you know, he's empowering Scott Perry and Scott Mills. And I think that it's a little bit overblown with how bad of an offseason they have had. But the Phoenix Suns are another conversation altogether, because I think Robert Sarver and these other owners that think that they're basketball savvy minds, and they sort of employ guys that are sort of yes men in ways. It's why, you know, Ted Leonsis in Washington, I know my boy Nick Busing, co-host of JBT, has said this with Ernie Grunfeld. Ernie Grunfeld would just do what Ted Leonsis said. Garpacks in Chicago, they're just doing whatever Reisendorf says so they can keep their jobs. So I think that how the front office and the higher-ups above the players and the coaches and everything else, how you build an organization, sort of like what Nick was saying, not just through the draft, but through coaches, through roles, through medical teams, through analytics departments, because the Lakers have been an absolute shit show. If you have all the money in the world, you know, you're printing money as the purple and gold, don't you invest that in a similar way to what the Clippers are doing and go, look, I'm going to give all this money to analytics. I'm going to give all this money to scouting. I'm going to give all this money to all these things, because unlike in a lot of other sports, including the AFL, Aussie rules, there is no cap in when it comes to front offices and the rest. Whereas in the AFL, we have a thing called a soft cap, which means because there's so many teams, there's power teams within the sporting organizations here, they're going to be more drawn to those power teams like the Collingwood, which are like the Lakers of the league. So unless a soft cap is instituted, you know, that probably provides even more parity across the league and forces teams to do even better. But, you know, there's just so many different ways to build a contender. And, you know, we've got 10 or 11 of them this year.
Yeah, and I think they're all built different ways. You know, some are straight up through free agency. You mentioned the Lakers, and like they really didn't do anything necessarily amazingly right. You know, some of the draft picks were hits, but LeBron signed because they were the Lakers and where their location really is, and his family wanted to be there. Obviously, there's still some connection and the flexibility in cap space. And then you have other teams like we talked about built through the draft. So I think it's interesting. And the point you brought about the owners is really interesting. And like they have a 10-year window. The only thing that I think would get confusing on that front is you're dealing with money. Like you're dealing with big time money. Like we're talking billions of dollars. And like, if someone knows that, hey, this guy has to give up his spot, like the other guy has leverage in buying the team from him.
Yeah. It's obviously incredibly tricky, but the next CBA is going to be fascinating in terms of what happens there, because, you know, there's so much, the business of the NBA is probably not as fascinating as this sort of stuff, like the Russell Westbrook trade. But before we leave, guys, there's been some comments in the chat about just Chris Paul and, you know, a bit of sympathy for him, because the competitive desire that a guy like Chris Paul has had to get to the higher stage, to win the championship, it's like we sort of touched on a little bit. It's almost over. Do you guys feel sorry for him at all?
Corey?
I mean, I said this a little bit earlier. I mean, this is it. He's going to probably end his career without a ring. Obviously there's the chance he gets traded out of OKC or gets bought out, whatever the case may be down the line, but it's going to come up as an underachieving career overall. I don't know if that's a hot take. I mean, if the injuries and
yeah, I think at the end of the day, he's probably pretty close to being a top 5 point guard all time. I know we've had some really good articles from OTGBasketball.com about that. So
I don't agree with the, but I mean, when it comes to the playoffs, there's never really been much. I mean, the conference finals with the Rockets, the first year is the farthest he's gotten.
But yeah, has the playoff fails really been on Chris Paul? Because we've seen him have really good playoff series and his team still lose. Like, the one thing that sticks out is the one year against the Spurs. It was a first round series, but he was lights out. He had an injury and he still had the game winning shot over Tim Duncan.
True. I mean, they blew that 3-1 lead against the Rockets.
And he had that brain fade against, was it Houston? When he was, you know, I think in his last or second last year. So, I mean, I don't think Chris Paul is like a bad, you know, playoff performer by any stretch. You know, it's like the conversation with Stephen Curry. You know, I think it gets a little bit blown overboard because you're comparing to Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, and the rest. You know, when you get compared to the best of the best, you're obviously going to come off looking bad. I don't necessarily feel sympathy for Chris Paul just because I don't like him that much as a personality of a player. Like, the whole, like, you know, the way that he just
That was like the best GIF though ever. We got to give him up for that.
I mean, yeah, he's a GIF god. Him and James Harden, the gifts they've provided us over the ways, it's just like them and Jimmy Butler are like the GOATs. Like, you had Jimmy Butler on the Houston Rockets right now, man, the gifts would be out and the memes would be insane. But I don't feel so because, you know, I think that a lot of it has to do with him as well because his grinding personality, I think that the Clippers could have been a step better because DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin were a little more sort of jovial types in comparison to Chris Paul. And I think if Chris Paul hadn't have been so, and this is me obviously reading into things, hadn't have been so steadfast and strong and arrogant in the way that he sort of played and led the team, I think that we could have seen a step above for those sort of guys. Now, that was still great. Lob City is a version of basketball that I hold dear and one of my best friends who is a Clippers fan holds dear. But I can't feel sorry for a guy that I think that he has to bear some of the blame for the lack of success, be it Houston, be it the Clippers.
And I will say this, Chris Paul's an extremely smart guy. He knew when he signed this contract that if he wasn't winning in Houston, this contract was not going to be tradable. He knew that he signed this long-term deal. He wanted to cash out and get his money, and I'm not saying that's wrong, but he knew he'd be in a situation where, hey, I'm not going to be able to get traded to like the Lakers or some other contender. If his contract was, you know, in the $20 or $30 million range, who knows? He could have been on the Lakers earlier this offseason or something along those lines. So it's on him with the contract he just signed. And like you said, Jack, personality-wise, not necessarily the most amazing guy to get along with. And some of that's on him, some of that's on his teammates.
Jay's got a final question. Where does this, obviously, the star duos, there's star duos aplenty in the league. Where do they rank right now as a superstar duo in the NBA, Russ and James?
Let's name all the duos, I guess. We got Anthony Davis, LeBron James. We got Paul George, Kawhi Leonard.
Worse.
KD and Kyrie when KD's healthy. Worse.
Worse.
Let's see. What are some other big duos? I guess they're probably better than Dame and CJ. They're not superstars, but they're stars.
I think that CJ
Middleton
will worse just because I think that Giannis is MVP. It's hard. I think that they're around six or seven just off the top of my head.
They're not top five, but they're not under top 10 probably.
Yeah, they're definitely top 10.
Yeah, and I think you can make arguments for some other guys. Like, I mean, you know, Taj Gibson and Mitchell Robinson. Kobe White and Thaddeus Young. Or you could, you know, Drummond and Griffin, you know, where does that sort of rank? You know, Embiid
and Murray, where does that rank?
Yeah, Jokic and Murray. I think that Jokic and Murray are better. And
better fit-wise, but, like, this is where it gets interesting is because, like, we named a lot of duos, and James Harden is probably better than a lot of the players in those duos, but this combination just isn't necessarily, like, a clean fit. It's, like, all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it's two top 15 players. Yeah. In a duo, but doesn't necessarily mean that
they're Russell Westbrook top 15.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think he's 20,
he might be 15th, but he's probably top 15.
It depends on how you value efficiency, though. Like, I have a hard time envisioning Westbrook on a championship team ever. Like, I just don't know if his skill set ever fits. Like, obviously, he went to the finals with that young OKC team, but like, are you a championship team if Westbrook is your second best player?
They could have been in 2016. Yeah, 16 with Harden and Durant and Ibaka. They proved that. But obviously the league is completely different now. But at that point, yes. At this point,
you need a top three guy. Like, he needed to be paired with KD, who was top three.
I mean, it's the same as, like, sort of Kyrie Irving. But, Corey, if Russell Westbrook's top 15, then, mate, I don't know how we're going to do this top 50 heading into next season.
We had him 11th last time.
Yeah, but, like, I think that he's taken a significant step back, and some other guys have taken a significant step forward. But we'll wait and see how that one sort of panned out. That was going to be a fun exercise. But I think that we sort of skipped past the like, I'd love to see this on, like, you know, an OTG poll or an OTG just, like, comment sort of thing on Twitter at OGG Basketball, Jokic and Murray or Harden and Westbrook. You know, I think that we sort of touched on it briefly. Jokic is a top 10 guy. Murray has potential to be one of the better point guards in the league and has proven it pretty well in the playoffs. You know, Westbrook is going backwards. Harden is an MVP contender. I think you can make an argument for Denver, that Denver duo, being obviously they're a better basketball fit, like we sort of said, but they could be better next season. I mean, who knows? They could finish with the one seed and head to the Western Conference Finals.
Jamal Murray, I think, would have to take a huge step. Like, I think Jokic being around top 10 is fine. Like, you might have him top 10, you might have him top 12. I think it really gets interesting after like 7 to like 15 is where the range gets really hard for players. But Jamal Murray is just an intriguing player. And Corey and I have talked about it, Jack and you and I have talked about it. He's just very inconsistent. Sometimes you watch him and you're like, wow, this guy is really, really good. Like, he's lights out right now. And then another game you watch and be like, yo, where's Jamal Murray?
It's the D'Angelo Russell syndrome to an extent.
Yeah, they're very similar in terms of their consistency.
Yeah, and Crimson Strikers brought up a point that I can't believe that we forgot. In Utah, they've got like a star trio in Conley, Mitchell, and Gobert. And I think that, like we sort of talked about with Denver, the basketball fit there is nigh on perfect. That's why I think that if you're judging on talent alone, yeah, it's Russ and James Harden. And you can make an argument that they're top three, the higher echelon of star duos in the league, just based off talent alone. But next to each other and on a basketball court, actually playing the game, that's a different scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I think Donovan Mitchell is going to take one of the biggest jumps in the NBA this year just because he's going to have the best supporting cast he's ever had. Yep. And I think he's a guy that's going to get better. We already know Gobert. You know, I think most people would probably have him around top 15 because he's so dominant. Then when it comes playoff time, obviously he drops off a little bit. But Mitchell's a guy I think could really jump really high, and they could be one of the best duos because he'll have some relief this year. But guys, we've been on here for a long time. I'm hungry. I know Corey cooked some dinner and didn't get to eat it, so I think that wraps it up for today. As always, a pleasure. Thank everybody for checking in, watching on YouTube, listening, whatever it may be. Find us iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. And thank you guys.
Peace out, knuckleheads.
Subscribe on YouTube, homies.